Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island, pairing beer and music since 1988. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago, Illinois. Listen critically, enjoy responsibly.
One, two, tres, cuatro.
From WBEZ Chicago and PRX, this is Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot.
And I'm Jim DeRogatis. This week, a classic album dissection of 3 Feet High and Rising, the debut album by De La Soul.
It's just me, myself, and I.
It's an album that helped define hip-hop's golden age, and yet it's unavailable to stream or download on digital platforms.
We'll talk about the making of the album, its importance, and why this classic is so hard to hear today. Plus, we review the latest album from The National. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions.
She said, please.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and later in the show, we'll review the 8th album from The National, I Am Easy to Find. But first, we want to talk about a classic album that is not easy to find. De La Soul's 3 Feet High and Rising.
Three, that's a magic number.
Three.
Yes, it is. It's the magic number.
Three.
Somewhere in this hip-hop soul community was born three, they stubbed me, and that's a magic number.
What does it all mean?
That's right, Jim. And a big part of the reason why this album is unavailable is one oddball sample on one 66-second track called Transmitting Live from Mars.
Écoutez, à midi.
Quelle heure est-il?
Il est midi.
C'est l'heure de déjeuner.
Qu'est-ce qu'il y a à manger?
Des saucisses. Sans doute.
Greg, one of our favorite recurring segments on Sound Opinions is the classic album dissection, where we dig deep into a record that we've been living with for years that we think is an absolute masterpiece. We've been talking about doing this record, the debut album by De La Soul, 3 Feet High and Rising, for a long time. I should tell you right now that there are many great stories connected to the making of this album. One of the difficulties you, the listener at home, may have is it is not streaming. You cannot purchase it as a digital download. You can buy the CD on the Amazon.com, but this record is hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go crate digging and look for the vinyl.
Yeah, it's really tragic, and I think it speaks to that particular era of hip-hop. What we are catching here, this album came out in 1989, 3 Feet High and Rising by De La Soul. Three kids from Long Island with another kid from Long Island who was a little bit older, Prince Paul, the producer.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people talk about this with reverence, this period in hip-hop, the golden age of hip-hop. I've heard that referred to more than once.
Oh, and not just people. The likes of Chuck D, Afrika Bambaataa, everybody pays homage to this record.
As a music fan, it was an incredible time. I remember collecting the first 12-inch singles from hip-hop in the late 70s, early 80s, and thinking, this is incredible stuff. It reminded me a lot of punk rock. What we saw was a rapid evolution of hip-hop in the next 5 years.
Just clap your hands, everybody. Everybody, clap your hands.
Just clap your hands, everybody.
Make a clap to this.
Into a more sophisticated art form based on sampling. It's important to note that the idea of sampling, it was still a relatively new art form, and you started to see producers working with this idea of pulling little bits and pieces of music from a huge variety of recordings, recontextualizing them, and making them into something new.
Funky.
So when you think about something like Public Enemies, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, or Ultramagnetic MC's Critical Beatdown, or the Jungle Brothers was Straight Out of the Jungle.
Or Beastie Boys' Boutique.
Paul's Boutique, which came out right around the same time.
They were just wrapping up the Beasties, Paul's Boutique, when they first heard De La Soul's 3 Feet High and Rising. It almost said, like, why are we going to bother to finish this?
Yeah, their whole reaction was, our record isn't good enough. It doesn't match up to this one. So this record was held in high reverence because it was an artful hip-hop record. It was self-consciously artful in the way it used these samples and the way it put these samples together. So what we saw was a flowering of this art form with 3 feet high and rising at the very center of it. The whole discussion about hip-hop seemed to change back then. It was this upstart music that wasn't going to last to something that had real staying power, that had a sense of these records are going to be played 50 years from now and people are going to respect them. But as you said, because of the way sampling has been viewed legally, that whole idea is thrown into question. There's a large issue here. Can a record like 3 Feet High and Rising even be made anymore today because of the copyright laws?
We'll get to the whole sample controversy, but let's introduce these fellas first. They all came from around the town of Amityville, home of the Amityville Horror on Long Island. You remember that?
Yep.
You know, Prince Paul, real name Paul Houston, is a DJ for an influential hip-hop group, Stetsasonic. Mm-hmm. He's producer, he's the DJ, he's one of the driving forces.
I got a girl named Sally, and she don't squall or eat pork with a spoon or fork.
But I heard that
some people don't like the way Sally walks.
And then he meets, through a mutual middle school music teacher, Pacemaster Mace, Vincent Lamont Mason, who's going to become the DJ for De La Soul. He begins, Mace, working with Stetsasonic, and then introduces Paul to his pals. We have Trugoy the Dove, David Jude Jolicoeur.
My name happens to be Trugoy the Dove. Trugoy is yogurt backwards. Yogurt, I enjoy to eat yogurt. I mean, I eat it a lot.
And Pasdnus, Kelvin Mercer.
I'm Pasdnus. You can call me Pas. Pas is backwards for sop, and Danus is backwards for sound. Sop, sound.
If you're getting a sense of high school playfulness here, I'm glad. These kids were all in high school. Paul said, I met them. They were nerds. I was a nerd. We were all nerds. Paul's a little bit older. He had accomplished a lot with Stetsasonic, a lot being relative. Hip-hop was being born. He'd made an impact in this small but burgeoning music scene. They record a single, essentially on a cassette in the basement, Plug Tunin', and it winds up in the hands of several labels who begin fighting for it.
Answering any offer of service, prerogative, praise positively, I'm acquitted. Enemies publicly shame my agility. After the battle, then victims, I'm with it. Simply sue, well moved. Vinyl like rude, transistors are never more shown with life. Wind vocal flow brings it all down in ruins. Due to a clue of a naughty noise called Plug Tunin'.
De La Soul, in a decision that will have ramifications, decide to sign with Tommy Boy, small but extremely hip label on the hip-hop scene at that point in the late 80s, mainly because Tommy Boy showed the most enthusiasm for them. But business-wise, they didn't quite have their act together. These guys begin recording in the spring of 89. They spend a couple of weeks, and it is essentially a party. All three of them have given interviews, plus Paul, saying, you know, they would walk in each day with a stack of albums under their arms.
Mm-hmm.
These were not albums they went out and crate dug for. These were albums their parents owned, right?
Right. Here's Trugoy back in 1989 talking about the different styles of music they each grew up listening to.
My background influence was my parents listened to a lot of old Western, some jazz, some reggae. May's parents listened to a lot of calypso and a lot of R&B. And Pa's parents listened to a lot of jazz.
And some of them, you know, look at the list. Otis Redding, the Barqués, Steely Dan's, Asia, Johnny Cash. The title, 3 Feet High and Rising, comes from one of the guys found Dad had an album by Johnny Cash, 5 Feet High and Rising. They said, oh, there's three of us. Let's take that.
Trees, cows and water up past her knees, 3 feet high and rising. How high's the water, mama? 4 feet high and rising. How high is the water, Papa?
Hall & Oates, Liberace, Billy Joel, Kraftwerk, a snippet of New York Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia reading the comics, as he famously did over the radio, and a recording of How to Speak French.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All of this and more, so much more, winds up on 3 feet high and rising. And then they come up with this thematic link, which I'll let you take over. Because, you know, right now I think the idea of skits in hip-hop, we have long gotten sick of them.
Right.
But nobody had done it.
Well, it starts here, you know. And it was Prince Paul's idea to you know, put together these little interstitial pieces into this recording of these wildly diverse pieces of music. You know, let's do a game show, boys.
Hey, all you kids out there. Welcome to 3 feet high and rising. I'm going to ask an amount of 4 questions, and you'll try to answer them correctly. Now you out there in the audience can answer along with them. How many feathers are on a Purdue chicken? How many fibers are intertwined in a shredded wheat biscuit? What does touche et lele poo mean? How many times did the Batmobile catch a flat? Now that we know the questions, we'll let the contestants think them over, and we'll return right after these messages.
How many flat tires did the Batmobile get, right? I mean, they're just goofing around. You get the sense of friends goofing around for the mic. You know, like when kids first get a microphone, that's the story of everybody here in public radio. They first get a microphone and a recorder, and they make their own radio plays.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it sounds like De La Soul. You know, barely out of high school, they're all doing.
They needed to separate themselves. They understood that there was so much great stuff already happening out there that it was pointless to make another hip-hop record that sounded like anything else that was already out there, because there was classics coming out almost every month, it seemed like, at that time. So they went far afield, and Prince Paul goes, I can work with these guys. I mean, he was the most experienced of the group. He recognized somebody that had been was creating their own lane. As soon as he heard that first demo for Plug Tunin', he was like, these guys are onto something different. I want to work with them. You know, and Trugoy, on that particular track, talks about the first time around, you didn't quite understand our new style of speak.
The first time around, you didn't quite understand our new style of speak.
Don't worry, we can fix that right now.
So why don't you all just grab your bag,
come on board, hoist the anchor, and we'll be off.
They were self-consciously coming up with a new language. I mean, they were quoting their version of street slang on this record. They were coming up with their own phrases, their own way of turning words around. So it was a very self-conscious effort to make an artful album that was different than everything else out there. You know, you think about the way that Plug Tunin' was put together from a standpoint of the recording. You know, they went deep. You know, that there's a doo-wop record that very few people knew about as sort of a basis for that record. There was this sort of chaotic, playful, abstract, subversive humor to the whole thing.
Answering any offer service, prerogative, praise positively, I'm acquitted. Enemies publicly shame my utility. After the battle, then...
Let's talk about some of the standout tracks on 3 Feet High and Rising.
Everybody's saying what to do when sucker lunatics start digging and chewing. They don't know that the soul don't go for that. Potholes in my lawn, and that goes for my ride.
One of the early tracks, Potholes in My Lawn. Think about that. Surrealism of that image. You're in the concrete jungle. There are no lawns, only potholes, you know? This is what they're writing about. And there's a yodeling loop in the middle of that
there
song.
Is a yodeling
apropos
loop.
Of nothing other than the fact that it's just funny. It's surreal.
Which leaves my lawn with lawn shoe. I think I better plant traces to give clues. Or better yet, call 911. And when they get here, I inform them I'm the plug one of the plug cheer and let them realize the reason for concern of the soul. Cause we've come down with a case of potholes.
The track was about the jealousy of the neighbors. These guys were doing something, and their success spawned jealousy. So this is a battle rhyme, but it's a battle rhyme that didn't sound like anybody else's battle rhyme at the time.
Look,
totally original.
I think the key to understanding De La Soul is they were not afraid to be nerds.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'd have to wait another 30 years for somebody like Lupe Fiasco to come forward, or very early Kanye West, to take pride in their nerddom and to not be posing. De La Soul got a lot of crap for it right from the beginning from towering figures like KRS-One of Boogie Down Productions. There was a connection there with Stetsasonic. What is this hippie crap? The Daisy Age is what De La Soul proclaimed. Da inner sound, y'all, right? But they were kids, Greg. What about the magic number? You know, they grew up with a bowl of sugary cereal in front of the television watching Schoolhouse Rocks.
Right.
And, you know, three is a magic number is one of the best of the mathematic arithmetic Schoolhouse Rock songs.
A man and a woman had a little baby. Yes, they did. They had three in the family. That's a magic number.
And they're happily sampling it. I don't think they're doing it as shtick. I think they're doing it as this is where we come from.
Yeah, this is who we are.
This is who we are.
Three, that's a magic number.
Three.
It is. It's the magic number.
Three.
Somewhere in this hip-hop soul community was born three, they stubbed me, and that's a magic number.
What does it all mean?
Difficult preaching is posthumous pleasure. Pleasure in preaching starts in the heart. Something that stimulates the music in a measure. Measure in the music, racing three parts. Casually see, but don't do like the soul. Cause seeing and doing are actions for monkeys. Doing hip hop, hustle, no rock and roll. Unless your name's Brewster.
You know, even the Jennifer Taught Me is sort of a, it's built on this whole cliche, you know, the schoolboy crush and I'm gonna seduce the prettiest girl in the school.
Oh, breakfast, broken fast. She was in my English class. Asked for notes, rocked my boat. Jennifer, oh, Jenny, lost her favorite penny. So I gave her a dollar. She kissed me and I hollered.
But he's not cool because Jennifer, at the end of the interlude, moves on. She's dumped this guy already, realized he's not cool enough for me. And they're just kind of like, okay, you know.
Yeah, right.
I had my moment in the sun and now it's over. My 15 minutes of fame are up. Jennifer doesn't want me anymore. And then there's that ridiculous but nonetheless apropos chopsticks interlude, the Liberace chopstick interlude in the middle of that song, you know, that just kind of breaks everything up. And you go, what? Where did that come from?
Listen.
Hey, look at little Darwin. Look at him go. Look at him go.
At the same time, though, it needs to be pointed out that these guys were smart. Wasn't just all jokes. It wasn't all about, let's talk about our misadventures as high school nerds. When you think about a track like Tread Water, just look at the lyric sheet alone. You don't even need music to sort of get the idea that this is an elaborate fable they are creating here. It's not a tossed off piece of work. It's really a fable about ecological disaster.
I was walking on the water when I saw a crocodile. He had daisies in his hat, so I stopped him for a while. He delivered me a message, a massage to soothe my stage. What it was more than plugger, dosage more than Daisy Age.
You've got this whole idea of a talking fish, you know, in the bathtub.
Yeah.
And you've got the talking crocodile with daisies in his hat on Dove's journey across the river. And the monkey who's talking at the end of the record is a fan saying, you know, you've uplifted me with this record. And he advises Pastanus to stay the course. Don't be swayed by what people say you are. Be who you are. It was almost like they were advising themselves that, you know, people are going to misinterpret this hippie thing, this Daisy Age thing, and they're going to cast us as a bunch of softies and outsiders and people who don't know what they're doing, that don't belong in hip-hop. And he says, you know what? Don't listen to them. Be who you are.
Well, that's exactly what happens. I wanted to mention one more song before we get to the sad denouement of this record. You know, they sample Hall & Oates's I Can't Go For That.
Yeah.
And in De La Soul's hands, it becomes Say No Go.
Say no go.
wanna wear it.
Which is anti-drug, right? One of the least cool things that's happening in hip-hop at that time. We have not yet, or we're just about to have, the explosion of West Coast gangster rap. You know, innumerable tales about drug dealing. We've had some of that at that point in New York. You know, it's going to become the endless trope in hip-hop forever. After a short break, we'll dig into the story of the breakout hit from 3 Feet High and Rising, Me, Myself, and I. We'll also explore how the album's 200 samples set the stage for a decades-long legal battle that impacted the sound of hip-hop for years to come. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Brewing Chicago-inspired beers since 1988, our friends at Goose Island have award-winning, refreshing beverages ranging from hazy IPAs to the new 312 Lemonade Shandy, only available in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
Now you tease my plug one style and my plug one spectacle. You say plug one and two are hippies, no, we're not, that's pure plug four. Always pushing that we formed an image. Just me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot here with Jim DeRogatis. This week, we're digging into the history of 3 Feet High and Rising, the classic 1989 album by hip-hop trio De La Soul. The breakout hit from that album was Me, Myself, and I, a song built on 6 samples. It's also a song that almost didn't happen. They'd finished the album, they turned it into Tommy Boy, and Tommy Boy does the record company cliche, we don't hear a single.
Right.
Give us something we can play on radio. They go back in the studio, the principal takes his Parliament sample, not just Knee Deep. And builds this incredible track underneath Me, Myself, and I.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. Tell me, mirror, what is wrong? Can it be my daylight clothes or is it just my daylight soul? What I do ain't make believe. People say I sit and try, but when it comes to being daylight, it's just me, myself, and I.
They talk about this idea of being played by the label.
Yeah.
And being played by, you know, being pigeonholed because of the way a particular record sounds. Style is surely our own thing, not the false disguise of showbiz.
My name happens to be Trugoy the Dove. We don't dress with the gold chains and the Tazelle glasses and the Kango hats and all that stuff, the sneakers. We don't do all of that. We just, you know, choose to be ourselves.
It's just me, myself, and I.
We now see the world and the record companies for what they are.
Right.
We're moving on.
We're moving on.
That sort of sets the stage for the next record, which was a complete 180. They say it right in that track.
Yeah.
It's just me, myself, and I. Now you tease my plug one style and my plug one spectacle. You say plug one and two are hippies. No, we're not. That's pure plug four. Always pushing that we formed an image. There's no need to lie. When it comes to being plug one, it's just me, myself, and I.
That song alone has 6 samples. It's got Not Just Knee Deep by Funkadelic. It's got Funky Worm by the Ohio Players.
Say it now.
Yeah.
Say it now. Yeah. Me and the Ohio Players gonna tell you about a worm.
Rapper Dapper Snapper by Edwin Birdsong. Gonna Make You Mine by Loose Ends. And the original Human Beatbox by Dougie Fresh.
Right.
All of that in one song. Over 200 samples on this record. The problem is only 60 were cleared. What does that mean?
This was new turf at this point. The rules for hip-hop and for sampling were being written. De La Soul have subsequently said in many interviews, and I do not believe it's justification after the fact, that they just assumed the record company was going to handle this.
Right.
And the record company, Tommy Boy, did handle some of it. But they missed quite a few, including a little snippet of a song You Showed Me by the Turtles.
À midi.
Quelle heure est-il?
Il est midi.
C'est l'heure de déjeuner.
Qu'est-ce qu'il y a à manger?
Des saucisses. Sans doute.
I think the Turtles were one of the mediocre wannabe Beatles kind of bands of the mid-60s. De La Soul took 12 seconds of it and looped it for a 66-second track under the How to Speak French recording, right? You know, and the Turtles sued. And sued with a vehemence, you know, I think unwarranted. They were looking for $2.5 million for this 12 seconds of sound. You got to remember, these weren't just clueless white guy wannabe Beatles. Howard Kalin and Mark Volman, the leaders of the Turtles, went on to play for years with Frank Zappa.
Yeah.
You think if anybody would have appreciated freakiness, it would have been Kalin and Volman. Anyway, you know, what's more, Zappa would include bits of Edgar Varese in his music, right?
Yeah,
I mean, he's quoting everything from Schoenberg to Louie Louie. You know, I never understood that. You know, it effectively has been a horrible legacy for this record ever since. The reason it's not streaming or downloadable to purchase and only remains available on a CD is, you know, the contract was also very narrow-minded. You and I have written books, right? Our book contracts say, you know, paper rights, audio rights, you know, Kindle rights, and any form that may ever be invented, right? You know, someday people are going to have a USB port in their neck and they'll just, you know, stick that in. You know, how Tommy Boy did not do that. And then Tommy Boy is later subsumed by Warner Brothers Records.
Mm-hmm.
None of these companies have ever wanted to go back and do the hassle of paying for these samples.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, look, for shame on the artists, really, you know, like the Turtles, for making such a big stink, you know, like, why can't they take a cut?
It's this kind of completely myopic, legalistic viewpoint of what sampling is. Everybody says it's stealing. Well, you know, if you borrow a blues riff, you know, there's one blues song, right?
Right.
And 8 million blues men made a variation on that one blues song. And nobody sued them. You know, you go through the history of pop music, everyone borrows or steals from somebody else. Sampling is just a way of recontextualizing the past and making it relevant for a new piece of music. You know, when you think about an artist like, and Prince Paul is an artist in the way he used these samples, it's ridiculous to think that somebody would sue them for millions of dollars for appropriating a few seconds of a record that no one has thought about for three decades.
And the group had its own philosophy on what it was doing with the samples. Here's the album's producer, Prince Paul, followed by De La Soul's Trugoy the Dove and Mace, talking about the art of sampling in 1989.
If you have a creative mind, you could basically use anything. For example, I could take a record such as a basic Disneyland Mickey Mouse record, for example. Now, people may not believe it, but if you look at these old records, you could find things like drum beats on them. It's hard to believe, though.
When we sample, we don't just, you know, just sample it and just lay it and loop it. We can turn it backwards, make the end the beginning, chop it up and make it sound like a totally new, different instrument being played.
It's not actually stealing. It's like bringing back the old songs, making the old songs new again, making people like it, you know, even more.
You know, you listen to the De La Soul 66 seconds, you know, and it's like it's unrecognizable. The other big case was Biz Markie got sued by Gilbert O'Sullivan for sampling similarly a couple of seconds of Alone Again, Naturally.
special.
I was on my way to 125th. I saw this Def Ben, yo, that's my man Cliff. As I flagged him down, he pulled to the side. At this moment, I had to swallow my pride.
The judge was so clueless, not only about this nascent, burgeoning hip-hop culture. There's a wonderful piece that Robert Christgau has written about that trial. Look it up online. The judge had to ask several times for the court to define for him what R&B was.
Right.
He didn't understand. So you have this English wannabe, you know, blue-eyed soul singer, has this hit. The difference was Bismarcky knew it had to be cleared, and Gilbert O'Sullivan had denied permission, and he went ahead and did it anyway.
Right.
You know, but De La Soul honestly thought they'd been cleared, you know, that somebody at the company store was taking care of them. And I just think it's one of the greatest tragedies in the history of music that everybody can't immediately rush to Spotify and listen to this album on repeat for the next 3 weeks.
Well, it's important to note that at the in the time that there was still a gray area here about what how to use sampling and how what the licensing rules really were. Because anybody could make up any number they want and say, okay, I'll let you use 4 seconds of my record, but you have to pay X amount of dollars. And they could just make up a figure.
Yeah.
Or not care. And there was sort of this gray area for that approach to making hip-hop records at the time. I mean, the licensing rules are so stringent. There has been precedent set in these court proceedings that to make a record like this now would be practically impossible.
Hello, it's the Soul, trooping in with the Jungle Patrol. And this one's about the KOs, the knockouts out there who's holding my
hold
bloody.
Up.
Wait a minute.
Now just wait.
Unfortunately, sample clearance complications aren't the only thing keeping 3 Feet High and Rising off of your streaming playlists.
Further complicating things, Greg, besides the clearance of all these samples, is the fact that CEO and founder of Tommy Boy Records, Tom Silverman, was trying to shove down De La Soul's throats for their first 6 albums a 90-10 split of the profits if those records were streamed. 90-10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are no manufacturing costs for a stream. Why should the record company get 90%? I suppose a portion of that would have to go to sample clearance, but De La Soul has dug their feet in, and good for them, except bad for listeners, right? It is, I think, one of the holy grails of great digging now, because it does sound better on vinyl.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it does, right? Or even CD digging. You know, CDs now, you can be buying for 10 cents. In a way, it became a challenge to the artists who followed, because I think De La Soul's legacy is alive and well.
Yeah.
I hear it in artists like The Social Experiment, Chance the Rapper's backing group, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Nate Fox and Nico Siegel.
Don't you look up to me. Don't trust a word I say. Don't you end up like me.
I hear it certainly in a lot of what Common went on to do, that wonderful Electric Circus record.
The lives I affect and connect the control with me in your basement. Your mama got blow. I provide the vibe to keep the strippers on pose. To me, the black experience, the glorious tone. From a school that's old bone, so I rock gold and platinum. Some cats I hold notes and cast for them. On streets I rap with them, in ghettos I blast for them. Mash with them at the party and all. Be the universal language that's embodied and all. With the Billie Holiday, Bob Marley and y'all. Y'all feel most high when I be
wherever there's ambition, Frank Ocean, you know, I've heard it, you know.
The best song wasn't the single. But you weren't either. Living in Ladera Heights, the Black Beverly Hills, domesticated paradise, palm trees and pools. The water's blue, swallow the pill, keeping it surreal. Whatever you like. Whatever
refusing to color good in the lines and wanting to reach out far and wide. But what they've had to do is partner with musicians.
Right.
Right. What you can do is play a riff.
Right.
You know, if you are recording a riff instead of sampling a riff.
Or in effect, create your own sample on a keyboard
right.
or a synthesizer
right.
or whatever
right.
And then sample that, you know,
right.
which is still a way of doing it, you know.
But, we should explain for listeners because I think still a lot of people do not understand. Over 200 samples on this record. A similar number, even I believe even more astronomical on It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us
yeah.
Back by Public Enemy. Similar on Paul's Boutique, right? I'm sorry. We can give you those couple of hundred records and a sampler
yeah.
and show you how to use it. You are not going to accomplish what the Bomb Squad or Prince Paul did or the Dust Brothers with the...
Well,
it is so
dense. It's an art.
It's a true talent.
Yeah.
I don't think people understand. You know, people think sampling and they think about what, you know, that Puff Daddy song where he steals half the Sting song.
Yeah.
Pain I feel, give anything to hear half the breath. I know you're still living your life after death.
That's right. not what these artists were doing.
I also think we have here the roots of whatever you want to call it, indie rap. Certainly part of the emerging subculture in New York of the Native Tongues movement, you know, the Tribe Called Quest.
Check it out, you got me mesmerized.
Jungle Brothers, Queen Latifah, Black Sheep.
MC Light.
De La Soul was right in the middle of that. Yeah, absolutely. And when you think about the idea that rap, now rap, you didn't have to be hard or nasty, you know, or street to connect. You could be positive, smart, abstract, nerdy, funny.
Because I gotta like.
You know, you could be yourself. You could be anything you wanted to be, as long as you were creative. So you get Mos Def, you get Talib Kweli.
Ooh, yeah, baby girl, look at you. Coming on the block looking fresh and brand new. Ooh, head wrap cover your head too. Pretty feet big and do open toes.
You get Common. You get, you know, the whole Chicago sound from Chance the Rapper back to Lupe Fiasco.
So, he was banished to the park. Started in the morning, one stopped after dark. Yeah, when they said it's getting late in here. So I'm sorry, young man, there's no skating here. And so we kick.
Yeah. You know, think about Kanye, you know, the way he used sampling, the way he was able to be himself on his early records.
They take me to the back and pat me, asking me about some khakis, but let some black people walk in. I bet you they show off they token blackie. Oh, not enough, Kanye, let's put them all in the front of the store. So I'm on break, next to the no smoking sign with a...
You think about the Def Jux record label under LP.
Dark hair, dark eyes, long walks through a park, and a lot of them lies. I'm a little bit jaded by a lot of what I see. So
again, those are the children of 3 Feet High and Rising, and it goes on and on.
I want to be picked up, held tight and kissed, but things like this don't happen to dudes like me, because I'm more Coldplay than I am Ice-T. They say that good girls love bad guys, and that might be, but a bad girl with a good guy, that's unlike...
Now we want to hear from you. Where do you hear the legacy of De La Soul today? Let us know. Call our hotline at 888-859-1800. When we come back, we review I Am Easy to Find, the latest from The National. And Jim drops a quarter in the Desert Island Jukebox. Jim, what do you got for us?
Greg, I had so much fun, don't know about you, doing the Paisley Underground genre
yeah.
dissection, that I'm going to do one band we only mentioned briefly in passing, a cornerstone band from that movement, as well as one of the godfathers of alternative country.
That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
Violin, you should try to get some sun. You remind me of everyone. Rylan, did you break your mother's heart? Every time you tried to play your part.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis. That's a track from the 8th studio album from The National, I Am Easy to Find. The track is called Rylan, a track they started to perform on the road a couple of years ago and has now surfaced on this new studio album. The band formed 20 years ago, Jim, in Cincinnati, has since moved to New York. It got signed to the Beggar's Banquet Records label in the early 2000s after putting out a couple of indie releases. Its breakthrough came in 2005, Alligator. Subsequent albums continued to do better and better. The band started playing in front of bigger audiences with each album cycle. The 2017 album, Sleep Well Beast, actually won a Grammy Award for Best Alternative Music Album, and the band toured extensively behind that record with the notion that they were going to take some time off. Instead, this film director, Mike Mills, not the Mike Mills from R.E.M., but a director who's done movies like 20th Century Women, started communicating with Matt Berninger, the lead vocalist in The National, and wanted to collaborate, and actually ended up doing a 24-minute film based on The National's music. In turn, Berninger said, hey, come and work with us on this new album. We feel this new energy coming across from what you're doing. Let's collaborate and make a record. So they brought in Mike Mills as the co-producer. We're going to talk about the 8th National album in a second. I Am Easy to Find, but here's a track from it first. You Had Your Soul on Sound Opinions.
I have owed it to my heart, every word I've said. You have no idea how hard I died when you left. If I yield to my trances, will I get up close again?
That is a little bit of You Had Your Soul by The National from the new album I Am Easy to Find. Greg, I hate this album with a deep and abiding hatred that I have not felt for a very long time. I hated it so much. It's one of those rare records that prompted me to go back and reevaluate the previous 4 National records we had reviewed on Sound Opinions, all of which I gave a really enthusiastic burn it, or back when we had the rating system, unapologetic buy it. In fact, in 2017, when Sleep Well Beast came out, I was applauding the move toward Radiohead electronic backing tracks, a new depth to accompany what has always been the band's signature, Matt Berninger's poetic literary lyrics. What is wrong with this record? Number one, it's electronic in all the wrong ways as opposed to the last record. Number two, it's lousy with choirs. There are many guest female vocalists here, including the great Sharon Van Etten. There's the Brooklyn Youth Chorus. They seem sort of tossed in randomly and haphazardly. Berninger's often compared to Leonard Cohen, both as a lyricist and as kind of, the downtrodden vocalist, the somber vocalist, right? You know, this is like those lousy Cohen records where it sounded like it was produced by some guy high on coke, you know, from the 70s disco scene who'd never heard Leonard Cohen before. I don't understand this record at all. And it's making me reconsider everything I think I thought I knew about The National.
Yeah, Jim, this is a disappointing record for me as well, especially after seeing them on their 2017 tour. They had so much energy, so much power. I thought they'd never sounded better. This record sounds kind of tired to me. Berninger in particular. You know, the one thing I always liked about Berninger was this sort of Jekyll and Hyde personality. I sing in this low, brooding voice because there's a seething rage right under the surface. And when it comes out, there's going to be hell to pay. And their songs inevitably would come to these kind of crescendos where you'd like get this really kind of scarifying vibe. You know, this brooding guy is just, you know, barely containing himself. There's none of that here. There's no breakthrough here. It just sounds kind of tired. The female vocalists seem to be brought in primarily as a foil. The whole idea that, hey, we're a collective, we're a collaborative entity rather than just a band, which sounds like, you know what? You're a pretty good band.
Right.
This seems like an excuse to make a sort of a mediocre album that almost sounds like a remix album.
But I see how this could have worked. Remember when Nick Cave did the duet with Kylie Minogue?
You know,
these are two things that shouldn't have gone together, right? But they did. And yet this is nowhere near like that.
I think the women actually walk away with this record. I mean, the best moments on the record belong to Gail Ann Dorsey. You heard some of her voice on that You Had Your Soul song. There's a couple other ones where she really shines. She seems like the beacon of hope in this record that seems like a complete downer otherwise. The intimacy becomes rather wearying. I think the fact that it's 64 minutes long and stays in that one very sad, brooding, intimate, we're having this conversation, male and female, yin and yang, you know, throughout the entire record, that never really kind of breaks
not
the
an
mold.
Interesting conversation,
it never goes anywhere. It is the most radical album of their career in that they have sort of broken the mold of what the National is, and it's also the most disappointing. It's a failed experiment.
I tell you, little buddy, this whole island is bewitched.
Remember, we were shipwrecked together.
As often as possible on Sound Opinions, we like to go to the desert island, pop a quarter in the desert island jukebox, and play a track we cannot live without. Jim, it's your turn this week.
Greg, we had so much fun doing the psychedelic Paisley Underground genre dissection last week. I wanted to reprise it a bit with another band that I loved. Now, they were part of that movement, but also part of something else, a new sound, a borning. The Long Riders came together like all those groups we talked about last week, the Bangles, the 3 O'Clock, the Rain Parade, you know, in the early 80s, around two key members, Sid Griffin, who'd been a rock critic like Steve Wynn of the Dream Syndicate, and Stephen McCarthy, both great singers, songwriters, enamored hugely of the psychedelic era Byrds and the next phase of the Byrds, Gram Parsons, Sweetheart of the Rodeo, the Byrds Go Country, you know, Gene Clark, that whole sound. I remember seeing the Long Riders when all they had was an EP out, 10-5-60, released in 1983. They blew my mind because I believe it was Granada we had just invaded, and they sang this song that I'd never heard before. I'm younger than you. Masters of War.
Yeah. I heard of
and
that
I was like,
one.
I love this band.
Yeah.
I really think they're underrated as one of these bands that without whom there would have been no Uncle Tupelo, would have been no, you know, decades worth of alternative country, no Bloodshot record, that whole genre, right? These guys were there in 83 and 84. And, you know, it was as poignant lyrically as musically. I want to play a song from State of Our Union, their 1985 album, which I think sounds like it could have been written yesterday. It's called Looking for Lewis and Clark. Lewis and Clark, the two explorers who discovered there was a west coast to this guy. Mm-hmm. Thomas Jefferson sends them out, says, figure out how to get from here on the east coast, you know, to whatever's out there in the west. We don't know, right? With help from Native Americans, with incredible courage and fortitude, they cross the country. They tell us what America is about, right? Geographically, mm-hmm. and what this place is. Here's the Longriders singing in the height of the Reagan era. I thought I saw some diplomat hawking secret plans in the park. I thought I saw my president walking through Harlem late after dark. In a world of love where they burn like Nero, you write them a check and then you add a zero. Mm-hmm. Looking for Lewis and Clark. There's also humor in here, too,
right.
because he imagines himself going to heaven and meeting Tim Hardin and saying, tell Graham Parsons about my band, the Longriders. Right? It's, you know, they were an incredible band live, not always super successful on record, but, you know, they're back together. There is a new Longriders album, Psychedelic Country Soul, just came out. They are touring the country. If you never got to see them in the day, go see them for sure. And the new album, I think, is really strong. Here's one from back in 1985, Looking for Lewis and Clark by the Longriders on Sound Opinion.
I thought I saw some diplomat hawking secret plans in the park. I thought I saw my president walking in Harlem late after dark. In a world of love where they burn like Nero. You write him a check and you
That is the Longriders, Looking for Lewis and Clark. New album's out. They're out on tour. Greg, what's on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, it's time to dig up some more buried treasures. We love this feature that we do every once in a while on the show. Records that are flying underneath the mainstream radar that we think you need to hear.
You can download the Sound Opinions podcast wherever you get such things. Sound Opinions was produced by Alex Claiborne, Ayanna Contreras, and Andrew Gill. You're looking for Lewis and Clark. We're looking for Brendan Matisak. I don't know, he's climbing a mountain or something. On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So give us a call on our hotline, 888-859-1800.
New messages.
Hey, Jim and Greg. This is Brad calling from Washington, D.C. Just listened to your reunion show and wanted to reflect on probably the coolest reunion I ever got to see, which was my sophomore year of college in St. Louis, driving a couple hours saying, to hell with finals, we should go see the Big Star reunion. Only two of the members, but they got together with a couple members from the Posies, reunited at a University of Missouri spring fling, and a few hundred people gathered and were blown away by what then became a sort of mini reunion that Alex and Jody had for a couple years. It was a pretty special moment that became a CD that was released a couple years later, and the one band that I would love to see reunite was actually at that show, which is Uncle Tupelo.
While I'm sitting here thinking of you, who wants to give thoughts of me?
All members still going strong. There's not a lot of love lost between them, but it would be pretty incredible to see those three original members get together at least one more time. Thanks for a great show, as always, and keep it up.
Working on that graveyard shift.
You asked about fans. I'd like to see a reunion of the original members. XTC, the kind of the second phase with Colin Moulding, Andy Partridge, Dave Garrick, Gregory, and Terry Chambers. I saw them once, and I'd love to see that lineup again. Also, the Au Pairs. I never saw them when they were touring, and they were such an awesome band. That's it. Thanks. Keep up the great work. Bye.
My name is Keith, and I'm calling from Carver, North Carolina. And a band that I would pay crazy amounts of money to see get back together is a band called Jellyfish. And they were from the early 90s in San Francisco. They were amazing, psychedelic pop, just the Queen, Beatles influence, super harmonies. They recreated their stuff perfectly. Like, it was just beautiful the way that they were able to do the harmonies live. And they just put out two albums and quit. And I would go nuts if they got together again. But Spilt Milk, their second album, a masterpiece, but just a lot of their stuff is really amazing. All right, thanks. Peace.
Hi, guys. This is John. I'm a listener in Alameda, but I grew up in Southern California in Orange County, and I just heard the Paisley Underground show, and it took me straight back to high school. I first learned about Dream Syndicate from reading Robert Hilburn in the LA Times, and when he described the band and their music, I had to go out and get Days of Rump, Wines, and Roses immediately. So thanks very much, and I'll keep listening. Bye.
Hi, fellas. This is Peter calling from El Cerrito, California. I just, actually, I had to stop. I was listening to your show on the Paisley Underground, and I just heard Jim DeRogatis make a very strange statement, and I'm very confused. Davis, California is not a suburb of Los Angeles. If Davis, California is a suburb of L.A., then I guess you might say, oh, Morgantown, Virginia is a suburb of Chicago. They're like 400 miles apart, maybe more. Davis, California, I was kind of flabbergasted. Yeah.
No more messages.
To give us your opinions on Sound Opinions, call our hotline, 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week with more Sound Opinions, produced by WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.